Hey, everybody. This is Henry Bourne, and as always, I'm alongside my good friend.
I'm Chad Jamison. What's up?
And this is the Muni Pros Podcast, and I say this every week, but this one really is a special, special episode. I have on the mic with us Marissa Steen, and I got that right. We talked about it right before this we started recording. So before we jump in and talk everything LPGA with Marissa, we want to touch just briefly, because if you let me and Chet sit here and talk about the events that transpired this weekend, you're sure to just get us talking and talking, because what happened, Chet?
Spieth choked again.
Actually, same tournament.
I mean,
same result as, I'm losing my years now, 2021. Yeah, there we go. He lost it last year, kind of fizzled out in the final round, and then we saw him do it on 17 again this week. Congrats to Tom Hoagie, or Hoag. I've heard it both ways.
I heard it both.
So a very fun week from an otherwise kind of small tournament. We know a lot of names went over to the Saudi Golf League. I think that's what it's called.
Saudi International.
Because there's the PGL, and you might be able to help with this. There's the PGL, the new Premier Golf League, right? And then they were playing in the Saudi Golf League.
I think that event last weekend was just a European Tour event.
Okay, yeah. That makes sense. I was way off.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it was a European.
I think you're right, too. Okay, so definitely a smaller field at the AT&T, but otherwise, it kind of proved to be a pretty exciting week. All the big names that were there were pretty much near the top or kind of in contention. So, like I said, we could sit here all day. Spieth did kind of fall apart, but enough about the AT&T. We got Waste Management coming up this week. But more importantly, Marissa, we just want to jump in. You're Dark County born and bred. Well, actually, Westchester. And then, you're not born and bred.
Why don't you just
let
her explain? It might be better. You know, it's her life.
I was like, well, she was born in Westchester.
That's true.
So I was born in Westchester, Ohio. Went to Lakota West High School. Graduated in 2008. And then I went on to play college golf at the University of Memphis down in Tennessee. Graduated there 2012 and turned pro after that. I've been living in Dark County now for 2.5 or 3 years.
There we go. I knew Dark County was somewhere.
In the big city of New Madison. And I'm living there with my boyfriend, and we met just through some mutual friends a couple years ago, and here I am.
So how did it feel whenever you were able to say, I turned pro for the first time? Because we will never get that feeling, you know?
Honestly, it was probably the most anticlimactic thing of my entire career.
Really?
Yes. So I showed up. So I went to Q school as an amateur.
Okay.
And I got status on the Symetra Tour, which is now the Epson Tour. They just changed title sponsors for that tour.
A lot of tour name changes in the last 4 months, I feel like.
Yeah, definitely. At least it wasn't like Corn Ferry that switched right in the middle of the season.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
So I missed probably the first third of the season because I was finishing up college. So then once I got to the first event, like in June, I literally went to the one of the tour officials, and I was like, I want to play this event as a pro. And she's like, okay, I'll change it on the leaderboard.
That's it?
And that was it. That's it.
So
there's, like, you don't have to sign anything. You don't have to.
You don't have to, like, show your card or
nothing. Like, well, they knew I had status, right, from Q school. Okay. So I had my player credential. But, yeah, I just said, you know, I'd like to, you know, play this event as a pro and be able to earn money. And that was it.
That's crazy. That really is anticlimactic. Wow.
That is. That shocked me.
I get that question all the time. And people think it's, like, this big, do you have to, like, sign a paper to, like, declare it? And I'm like, no. Or even I know some girls who play, like, mini tour golf in Orlando. And, yeah, pretty much once you say, you know, I'm entering this field as a pro so I can make money if I, you know, finish in the cash, then that's it.
Huh.
Wow, that is really interesting.
That is.
It's not how I pictured it in my head. Obviously, I have had a lot of daydreams about it. So, you know, glamour, you know, cameras, and the red carpet.
Well, and I tell people, you know, a lot of people do think it's this big thing, right? Mm-hmm. And it's, again, like, you maybe have to, contact the USGA and sign a piece of paper or whatever. but it's not, but I always tell people, I'm like, you know, anyone could turn pro, right? Like you could sign up for an event as a professional and show up, but
right.
pretty quickly, yeah. right? But if you don't play well, like it sorts itself out.
Yeah, because they might not let you back in if you shoot high enough, right?
The only time, well, so the LPGA has the 88 rule. So if you ever shoot 88 or higher in a tournament, including at Q School, so when I say LPGA, so it would be Q School, Epson Tour, and LPGA.
Sure. Okay.
If you ever shoot 88 or higher, you're automatically withdrawn from the tournament.
Just the tournament?
Just the tournament, yeah.
Okay.
But typically, if you shoot 88 at Q School,
yeah,
you're not going to get through to really get right. status.
Right.
Yeah. So, again, so because that's the question, too. The other question people ask me all the time is, you know, what's your handicap? Well, once you turn professional, you don't keep a handicap anymore.
Mm-hmm.
When I turned pro in 2012, I was like probably a plus four or plus five.
Mm-hmm.
But so that's one of the misnomers as well, is not keeping a handicap. Again, though, even if you're a four handicap when you turn pro, it that doesn't prevent you from turning pro. But like I said, if you show up and you can't break 80, like you're not gonna make money. And
yeah,
I mean, I said it all kind of sorts itself
because it's
out.
Costing you at that point. You can show up to as a pro to any of like these tournaments you're referencing, but the amount it costs you to get to those tournaments, to travel, just to go in and basically, because there's an entrance fee as well, isn't there?
Yes, and especially, you know, for those first coming out to try to play professionally, they are starting at Q School. And I think for first stage, Q School entry is $2,500. You know, and then it's out in California, so the travel, and they play three golf courses, so you have to be there early enough to learn three golf courses.
Jeez,
you know,
yeah.
Lodging, you probably have a caddy. A lot of times at that level, people have, you know, a family member or a friend or something do it.
Right. Sure.
But some people do employ caddies, so that's a whole nother expense.
Right.
So, yeah, it gets expensive pretty quickly.
Yeah, so like she said.
It's a lot of risk.
A lot of – I just couldn't imagine. I mean, so I guess my question for you – so you turned pro in 2012. Just elaborate, like, on – the amount of work, like, what was your practice schedule like? Because, I mean, you hear it all the time when you watch basketball documentaries or even when they're just referencing, you know, a golfer, you know, the amount of time that they're putting in at the short, you know, the short short game area, the, you know, the driving range, then getting reps on the course. You know, they make it sound like, and it is legitimately a full-time job, but they make it sound like it's just you wake up, you practice, and then you go to sleep.
That's exactly what I did, really. I played other sports growing up, but once I really decided I wanted to focus on golf, I was a junior in high school. And my coach at the time, or actually he's still my coach, my coach said to me, he's like, well, if you really want to, you know, play D1 golf and you think you want to try to play professionally, he's like, all the best players I know, he's like, just completely immerse themselves in the golf culture. He's like, they pretty much make it their life. He's like, they hang out at the golf course, you know, they get there at 7-8 o'clock in the morning, you know, practice, go play, maybe take a lunch break, you know, come back, practice some more, you know, play some different games on the putting green or mm-hmm. the chipping area, go out and play 9 more holes, you know, and they really just make a day out of it. He's like, they're at the course all the time and they really just kind of dive in. So that's really what I did. I was lucky I had a place where I spent a lot of time at Four Bridges Country Club down in Westchester or Liberty Township. But there were a ton of junior golfers. So especially in the summer, there would be anywhere from 4 to 12 of us that would just hang out and do exactly that. Like our parents would drop us off in the morning, you know, mm-hmm. whenever, 8 o'clock, 10 o'clock. And then they wouldn't pick us up till after they were finished with work. So we would hang out all day long. And like I said, if we could get a tee time on the course, we'd go play. If not, we would just practice. And, you know, we goofed off some, too.
Oh,
you know,
absolutely.
Kids,
you got to have fun. Yeah.
But it was great because our parents felt safe dropping us off there. And we would just hang out. And most of us got really good just because we, like I said, we just made it our lifestyle.
And, right. you know, you're with a group of kids at this point. Basically, you're all doing the same thing. I'm sure you guys were very competitive as well with your games or when you went out to play.
Oh, definitely.
I mean, so you're – and that's the great thing about golf is, you know, you can do shooting drills in a basketball court, but it's not really competitive if you're just working on shooting. With golf, pretty much anytime you're practicing, you can make it a game of some sort.
Yeah.
Which I definitely think as a kid, you got to have that like fun part to it.
Definitely.
Like you said, you know, a little bit of goofing off here and there. I'm sure you had days where, you know, you went out and you, what's the game where you remove a club after you, if you win a hole? I don't know what it's called.
I don't know the name of it either.
Where basically you win a hole and then like I could say I want your driver and then you just can't use your driver for the rest.
Oh, I've never played that, but it sounds like fun.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
So you get to the point where you're like a 490 yard par four, you're using a 9-iron the whole hole.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm terrible at it.
there was a lot of that type of stuff though. We would go out and like play the red tees and you can only use three clubs, that kind of thing.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That would be fun.
You know, and see your score for nine holes. Just all kinds of stuff. And like I said, a lot of short game games on the putting green and the chipping green. And we did that for, like I said, for hours, you know, and it was super fun. And then we were all getting good at golf. So
absolutely. And it's fun once you get good. I mean, like I said, I forget, we were talking to Kyler last episode, and he was talking about growing the game a little bit. And he's like, how do you grow the game? And I said, just have someone hit a 7-iron pure. And then they're hooked. I mean,
yeah.
Oh, man, that sounds, I mean, obviously I would love to be able to do that now, just wake up and, you know, eat, sleep, and just golf. But, you know, I mean, so you spend all this time, it comes to fruition, you turn pro. So what is that journey, you know, look like? What have you learned through all your hard work? You turn pro. How do you keep it going?
I think for me, I've always just wanted to be the best golfer I can be. And that's really what's driven me. It hasn't been money. It hasn't even necessarily been anything else other than like, I love to play golf and I just want to get really good. And that's
right.
It. And
it's a great, it's a brilliant,
passion,
that's perfect.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and obviously the better you get, the other stuff comes along with it. But that's always from day one, like that was my only objective really. So yeah, but I mean, I would say the main lesson I've learned is really, you know, and it's a good life lesson too, is, I mean, if you put your mind to something, like nothing, if you decide you want to do it, nothing should stop you from achieving that.
Right. It's just you have to put the time in.
There's going
to
be sacrifice and there's going to be long hours and, you know, there's good days and bad days.
Absolutely.
But at the same time, I think, you know, in looking at my career so far, I never would have thought I would have played pro golf for 10 years and 10 years and counting. Right. So like that's like sometimes it's hard for me to even like view myself as like one of the top players because I'm like, I'm just me. But at the same time, when I do kind of take a minute and sit back and reflect, like, it's pretty cool. Like, you know, I decided when I was 16 or 17, I really wanted to give this a shot.
Yeah.
And, you know, I busted my ass and here I am.
Exactly.
And I think that should, like, show people. And I tell younger kids all the time, I'm like, if I could make it, you all can make it. You know?
Absolutely.
Now, again, like, you're going to have to work your butt off and you're going to have to, you know, it's going to take a lot of sacrifice and dedication and playing and everything else that comes along with it. But like I said, I think that's the thing that really is really pretty cool to me.
That,
yeah,
absolutely. I mean, and especially with golf, I mean, cause, and you lived in Ohio. So in the winter months, I'm sure, you mentioned you played at a country club. Did they have like indoor facilities for you to practice as well?
They had, a covered bay or a covered building on the back of the range that had three bays.
Okay.
But
awesome.
We would be out there when it was snowing and, you know, 15 degrees outside.
And that's why she's a pro.
That's right.
That's why when it was snowing, awesome. I said, you know what? It's basketball season.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel that. Yeah.
That, I mean, that's just incredible. It's really cool. I mean, you know, from a viewer standpoint, I'm a big Tiger fan. I don't know if you listen to any of our other episodes, but big Tiger fan.
Me too.
And I always wondered, like, and like you said, like looking back, does he realize like he is, you know, a legend in the game of golf? And you said you look back and you're just like, I'm just me. And it's so interesting just to hear that, like, you know, you've achieved so much.
Right.
And I think it's awesome that you literally just, I'm just me. I just love golf and I just want to get better at golf,
right,
which is, everybody's goal. And the great thing about golf, and I'm sure you get super frustrated when you just can't get something, but every day you come out, you could be doing something entirely wrong the day before, and then you come out the next day and something just clicks. And that's, I mean, that's the invigorating part of golf. But, you know, so going into like a tournament, like how do you set your goals or what, like going into a week, obviously you have your practice rounds and kind of all that, but how do you just structure your week?
Let's see. So I pretty much play 18 holes every Tuesday. So I'll walk the course. I like to do like kind of a heavy lift in the gym on Monday, because then I still have, you know, 48 plus hours to recover before the tournament starts Thursday. So I'll always like lift pretty heavy Monday. And then I'll walk the golf course and do some putting drills just to kind of get a feel. This is one thing I've learned. When I was first out on tour, especially on LPGA, I would feel like I had to play on Monday, had to play on Tuesday, had to play on Wednesday. And it's like, if you make the cut, come Saturday, I'm like already exhausted.
Sure, right. Yeah.
So now, and even last week when I was down in Fort Myers, I had missed the cut the week before. And I felt a little more pressure to do more on Monday. And I told myself, I'm like, no, like it's just Monday.
Mm-hmm.
Like stick to your normal Monday routine.
Right.
So I worked out, walked the golf course, did some putting drills just to kind of get a feel for the greens. Then on Tuesday, I generally just go through my full warm-up and then go play the full 18 holes. And then I'll do a little bit more practice on whatever I feel like needed work from the round.
Okay.
And then Wednesdays are normally pro-am days.
Sure.
So, and that just varies from week to week. If I'm not in the pro-am or I'm an alternate, then I'll just practice.
Do you enjoy those?
I do like the pro-ams.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's fun because it's just a fun round, and you're right. Still getting to play on the course, and there's still somewhat of the pressure. You're trying to hit shots
right
for your team, and you're trying to make putts and all that stuff. But it's great to get to know. I've met so many great people through pro-ams. You get to meet 3 to 4 new people a week, and really like to ask them about themselves.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk about myself the
whole
time.
Sure.
Right.
I know they want to hear
that.
About it.
Right.
But I really try to like pick their brains and, you know, ask about their jobs or families or whatever they have going on. So I do really like that part of it.
Yeah, that's
now,
awesome.
You know, you talk about programs. I mean, is there any other girls on tour that you, like, you plan to have a practice round with? Because I know, like, for example, you know, it seems like, and now this was pre-Ricky's downfall, but JT and Ricky always would do their practice round at the Masters together, it seemed like. I mean, do you have like anyone in specific you like reach out to and say, hey, you know, this time for a tee time? Or
I don't actually. I really don't like playing practice rounds with my friends, because then it turns into social hour.
Oh,
and we're
I see.
Talking versus exactly.
Yeah,
I see.
So
makes
I feel
sense.
Like my mind wanders, and then I'm like, oh gosh, we're on 8. I don't remember the first 7 holes, because we've just been hanging out.
Right.
Right.
So I actually prefer to play practice rounds by myself. I feel like, you know, with my caddy and I, it's a lot easier to stay focused and really get my work done. I'd rather, you know, focus for that 4.5 hours and.
Right. Because it's a business. Ultimately, it's a business venture
right.
you're out there for. So, and you can play golf with your, I mean, with friends anytime.
Whenever.
But when it's, you know, like it's like they say when you show up to, you know, a basketball or football game, it's, you know, business attire ready to go. So
definitely. And so I'd rather, you know, go out to dinner with them, and then we can just sit and socialize, hang out,
right.
or go do something fun. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, sometimes we'll split Airbnbs, that kind of thing.
Oh,
so.
Okay. Very cool.
Yeah.
Now I have a very random question for you that is something that I've always thought about. You finish a tournament round. So I'm always like, do you just normal stuff after a tournament round, or do you like just sit at home like, all right, tee times and not,
yeah.
you know?
Oh no, I try not to think about
yeah.
golf.
Yeah.
And that's one thing too, as I've gotten older, the more I've played, I really like staying either in host housing or in Airbnbs, because for the longest time, like if I was staying in a hotel or I was staying by myself, that's what you do. Like you go back and, you know, maybe call your family, maybe call my sister, or, you know, now I'll call my boyfriend, but it's like, and then you're kind of just like waiting for tomorrow. And I'm like, there's like nothing going on.
Right.
So I really learned for me, one, to be happier on the road. 'Cause it is, you know, you're out there a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You're away from home a lot. is to try to make it as much like home as I can. So if I stay like in an Airbnb or with a host family, it's a lot more of a home environment. And then I love to cook, for example. So mm-hmm. if I stay in an Airbnb, you know, I go to the grocery store once or twice during the week. I look forward to coming back. I make simple things because sure. I'm traveling and I don't have all my kitchen stuff with me, but I really like to cook and just kind of have that to like decompress and like something to look forward to that's not golf.
Yeah, absolutely. Very, very. I definitely agree. I think it would be a lot harder to not think about golf if you were going back to a hotel.
Yeah.
Because you're, like you said, you get to go, like if you like to have a place with a kitchen because it, one, gives you something to look forward to, and when you're actually doing the cooking, you're not thinking about golf, right. which I can.
And it feels like a home to you, right?
Right.
So it's not going back to, you know, just a box in a hotel room and sitting there staring at walls.
Right.
And, doing
and I am a total golf nerd. Like, I watch a lot of the PGA Tour and European Tour. You know, obviously I keep up with a lot of that stuff. But the problem with the hotel is if I go back there and all it is me and the TV, inevitably I'm turning on the golf channel.
Right.
And, you know, I really want to use that time to kind of get away from it. Like when you're asking me, oh, did you watch the AT&T this last week? And I was like, well, since I was playing, I'm like, no, I didn't catch any of it.
Yeah.
Because I will watch the PGA Tour some. I don't watch the LPGA when I'm out there playing.
Sure.
I'll watch it if I'm at home. And like when they go over to Asia in a few weeks, I'll probably watch. But when I'm out at the course all day long, living it for, I was out there for 10 hours. I don't want to go home and turn it on TV.
Exactly.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
I mean,
so.
I definitely get that. Yeah. I mean, so you just need a break sometimes, especially, I mean, if you had a really good day, you just want to keep that mental track going.
Right.
And if you had a really bad day, the last thing you want to think about is golf, you know?
Right.
So I definitely get that. That is, yeah, it's just super interesting. You know, I never, you always have, me and Cheddar always talking, and it's always just casual fan talk.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting to just hear it from the, you know, the other side of
it. We don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but
and I think too, like, to think about it from a sense of, you know, whatever anyone's job is, generally if they work a 10-hour day, when they get home, the last thing they want to do is think about work.
Right.
100%.
Yeah.
I don't even think about work at work.
Yeah.
So.
No, but like, so that's probably the best analogy I can think of. With golf being my job, I love it to death. I'm very lucky to do something I'm passionate about, but there's times when I just need to turn it off.
Absolutely.
Yeah, or else it just becomes overload.
Yeah, which brings me to a question I have for you. Like, how important is, like, you know, the mental aspect of it, or even mental health? Like, do you have a mental coach you work with, or because I know some tour players do that, but I don't know what your side of the story is.
I have worked with two mental coaches through the years. They're both still good friends. For me, though, and they helped me, and they really, I talked through some things with them and was able to learn more about myself and
right.
all of those things. The struggle I came to with that was, you know, and I even told one of them, I'm like, you can tell me how good I am, thought process, whatever, till you're blue in the face. And I can pay you $1 million. But until I believe it in my gut,
it's just talk.
It doesn't matter.
Right.
Yeah.
It's just talk.
So for me, and that was a mental hump I needed to get over, but, and this might not be correct, but at least in my mind, the way I processed it was, nobody can help me believe that except for myself.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
for sure. Yeah.
So I haven't worked with one in a couple years. Really for golf, and this sounds so basic, I've always played my best golf when I stand up on the tee box and I say, just hit the fairway.
Mm.
That's it. Just hit the fairway. I don't care how you do it. Then you're in the fairway. Okay. Just get it on the green.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't care how you do it.
Just worrying about
like
the next
literally
shot.
That simplistic.
Right.
And for me, that takes all the stress out of it. Like last year in the British Open final round, I was nervous and I actually didn't hit a great drive. Good thing I didn't hit it well, because I stayed short of the bunker. I hit it that bad. So I had like an 8-iron in, I don't know, I had like 140 or something in. And I had a caddy years ago. I was nervous in Q school, and I was a par 5 the second hole, and I told him, like, I don't know why I'm nervous. And he looks at me, he's like, it's 120 yards. I was like, yes. And he's like, do you know how to hit it 120 yards? I was like, yes. He's like, okay, do it.
<That's>
you know?
Awesome.
And so ever since then, like, I repeat that to myself. So even the final round of the British Open last year, I'm saying to myself, it's 140. Do you know how to hit it 140?
Right.
Yes. Okay. Hit it 140.
Yeah.
Like, that basic. And I've learned, too, with playing more professional golf, that British Open's huge. Majors are huge. Being in the final grouping any week on a Sunday is huge. However, 150 yards is 150 yards.
Right.
You know, all that other stuff, you know, media, social media, people calling you, texting you, all that stuff, it's great. But at the end of the day, don't make it more than it is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in that moment, it's a 150-yard shot.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, it's just...
That's how I process it, to help me get through those moments.
I could tell myself that, and I'd still shank it right. or blade it, you know?
Well, and that's another thing. You know, I say that, I feel like I say this all the time on the show, but golf is really that simple, though. I mean, it really is just, all right, just hit the fairway. And then when you're in the fairway, it's like, just hit the green. I mean, you hit the green all 18 holes, you're bound to knock in one or two of them, right? I mean,
definitely.
You know, so
and I will say, in intense situations, and especially, you know, like in the British last year, the other thing I told myself was just breathe. Like, keep your breathing pattern consistent. You know, like, deep breaths. Don't let your breaths get shallow or mm-hmm. short. But those are my two thoughts. You know, keep breathing and keep it consistent. Take good deep breaths, and then again over the shot. Like, okay, do you know how to hit an 80-yard wedge shot?
Right.
Yes. Okay. Hit.
Yeah.
That's just crazy. I'm trying to think in like your shoes.
Like, we can't.
I just can't.
Because
I can't even
we don't know what a tour event's like playing it, you know? Like, we would, our first time, if we played a tour event, we'd be nervous as heck.
It would,
like, even if we tore ourselves, you know, it's an 80-yard shot, we'd still be freaking out, you know? But that's awesome.
I guess when you first got out on tour, do the patrons, the patrons have like an effect on you, or initially was it like, oh my gosh, there's just a lot of people watching, and then obviously there's sound kind of around you that right. otherwise, you know, if you're just playing a turtle, that wouldn't really be there.
Right. The peripheral sounds never bothered me. I do a pretty good job when I'm over the ball, like kind of focusing in. Now, if there's something like really loud, or you know, I might back off and reset, but generally I can just go through it and not really worry. And I think the more it's around, like, the more you're able, or the better you learn to just tune it out, because there's always going to be something.
Absolutely. When you have that many people, there's always going to be. And I think that the white noise, kind of, when just, like, you know, groups moving and you can kind of hear that. I feel like anyone who plays golf can probably not hear that when they're standing over the ball.
Right.
But it's like you said, the out of the blue, really loud noises or something like that would really affect
right.
you.
Mm-hmm. But then, like, playing in front of crowds, I've actually always liked it. It's never bothered me. And that's one of the things, too. And even, you know, I've never been top 50 in the world or anything, but I tell myself, and this is one of the things with one of the mental coaches I work with, kind of gotten this mentality, like, they're here to watch me. So let's give them a show. You know, like, let's hit let's hit some good
that's
shots.
Awesome. Yeah.
And that's how I kind of dealt with it. It was hard for me at first. And even in the mental coach phrased it like, okay, even if they came to watch Stacey Lewis, he's like, this moment in time, they stopped and they are watching you hit a golf shot.
Mm.
And he said, you know, they're just as impressed if you hit it to 5 feet as if Stacey Lewis hits it to five
right.
feet. He's like, so, you know, give them a show. Like, he's like, they stopped. They took the time to stop and watch you hit. So, again, like that, so now I kind of take that mentality and I'm like, yeah, they stopped and they're watching me. They're not watching
right.
anybody else at this moment.
Well, right. And I mean, it's got to feel good when you, like, you know, like, obviously there's people watching you and you stuff one to, like, a foot or just hit, like, a bomb of a drive or just a tasty wedge. I mean, it's got to, that's. Not only does that impress them and that's what they are there to see, but I would definitely just be walking up there just smiling.
Oh, it's awesome. There's nothing like it. Yeah. There's one time in the Australian Open, I think it was the year I finished eighth in the Australian Open. 18 was a par four, and I hit my drive out. They had some mounds over on the right side of the fairway. When it came off my club, I was like, are you kidding me? That was a terrible swing. But so I had a punch out. And there was like the road that you drive in on cut through the fairway on 18. I think I was just short of the road. I had like 80 or 90 yards in. And the bleachers are packed. The stands are packed. There's a ton of people there. Aussies always turn out well, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. I remember being nervous on that shot because I was, again, with all the people there. Right. And I hit it up there like a foot. And the crowd goes crazy. And I was like, I was like, saved par there.
Imagine the roar, you know.
But it was awesome. Like, that was really cool. I don't think I'll ever forget that one.
That's sweet.
She's telling these stories, and I'm thinking of, like, my version of that story is just
it's like me.
It's in a golf outing at Turtle. I almost hold it to Tiger Group.
I was close
on 10.
See, but you'll never forget that.
I almost wish I would have missed it by, like, or hit a bad shot. It hurts that I was like that close to tying it. You know, it's one of those things. It's right. A really cool story. The whole group made a lot of putts, and Chet was supposed to be on our group, and
I got kicked off.
We kicked him off because our buddy who's in the guard, his guard got canceled, so he could actually play with us. So we let Chet know, and Chet came with
Shannon him. Picked me up that morning. He called me at like 7:30. Like, he woke me up. He just yells, "Chatterbug!" And then he's like, "You want to play golf today?" Like, sure, Shannon, I'll play with you. So.
That's awesome.
And they took us down.
Yeah, we did. It's revenge.
So,
but,
go ahead, Chet. You were.
I just want to ask you probably the most generic question. What's your favorite tournament that you've ever played?
I would say it's a tie between the U.S. Open and the British Open.
Okay. And why is that?
I've always really liked the U.S. Open just from, I think, growing up in the States, and it's just always been our national tournament. The USGA always puts on a great event. I played in two U.S. Women's Amateurs as well, and every event I've been to of the USGA's is top-notch. Great golf courses. They treat you really well. And then, honestly, the British, from the sense of – that's one of the other, like, pinch-me moments is looking back. I'm like, man, when I started playing golf when I was 13 – did I ever think I would play in two British Opens?
Mm.
No, never.
It's incredible. Yeah.
So like,
gives me chills.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
And, not even my life. You know what I mean?
And I love the golf over there. Over in Scotland is awesome, or the UK in general. But
yeah, I want to play over there someday.
It's
sweet.
I really like that style of golf. The way, just because it's so firm and fast, I really think my downfall with golf is tending to overthink things. And I think over there, because there's so many different ways to play shots, you can be so creative. You can go high, you can go low, and you can putt from 20 yards off the green if you want to in a lot of places. I actually think that having a lot of those shot options makes me, one, I can be more creative. And then two, once I pick the shot I want to play, I really need to commit to it.
Right.
Like I hit one in the British this year. I was like, the pin was probably 35 paces on. Again, I didn't hit a great drive, and at Carnoustie, if you hit it in a bunker, you're just wedging it out.
Yeah,
like it's a penalty shot. So I hit, it was a short par four, number 11, hit a terrible drive, terrible tee shot. And so I'm probably 20 or 30 yards, so I had to just kind of wedge it up there. I was probably 20, 30 yards short of the green. So I'm 60, 65 yards from the pin, and it was howling downwind. So I look over my caddy and I'm like, I don't really like going high with or like flying this a lot of the way there. I'm not exactly sure how it's going to hit. And I've done a lot of work with putting with a 3 hybrid when I was over there. So I looked at it. I'm like, I kind of like the 3 hybrid. And again, this is, you know, I have to make up and down to save par. And I think it was the final round. And so I'm standing there and I'm like, I like the 3 hybrid. So we pick a good line and from like 60 yards, I putt with a 3 hybrid and up to like 3 feet.
Jeez.
I would never.
But I think, you know, again, like because I committed to it and then really just try to feel it. Again, you could play that shot 40 different ways.
100%.
You could hit it with literally any club in your bag. So I think, but again, like that creativity brings out a side of my golf game that you don't get a lot in the States because everything is so flying into the greens generally. But then with that, it's actually freeing in a way because once you pick it, you really have to commit and just hit the shot.
Right.
You know, here a lot of times there might only be one or two ways to hit a shot that you have, and you might not love either option.
Yeah.
So over there, There can be so many different ways.
So I wanna dive in. You talked about this shot, the three hybrid shot. You were deliberating with your caddy on kind of the shot and your line. How important is that caddy conversation? Like when you have a difficult shot like that, is it like your way for sure? Or, I mean, does the caddy like have sway?
Yeah. And I also want to add, like Kyler last episode, kind of touched on his preference on caddies or whatever. So yeah, just kind of tap into like your caddy preference or like what that looks like for you. And
I mean, absolutely dive in. Is it, if you've had the same caddy for an assorted amount of years, you know,
a lot of questions.
Yeah,
it's okay. I do like to have a back and forth with my caddy. I always have. I had a really good family friend who caddied for me for, probably 11 or 12 years. So he started caddying for me in the U.S. Junior Girls Qualifier. It was the first time I could have a caddy, and I had no idea. I'm the only one in my family who plays golf, not a golfing family.
Wow.
And I had no
even crazier.
Yeah, that's impressive.
I had no idea who to even ask. I knew like neither one of my parents would be a great fit, as far as, you know, just because they at that time they've gotten to know the game a lot better, but at that time they didn't know it very well. So I asked my coach, and he said he's this guy, and he's like, you know, I think he would do a good job. And so he caddied for me. He agreed to do it. He came up to the qualifier with my mom and I. He did it again the next year. And then he started caddying for me, like, in the U.S. Women's Amateur and, you know, any amateur events I had in the summers. And then he caddied for me from 2012 through 2017 professional career. So that became very much where he was very involved, which was great. And it was nice at that point in my career, especially, you know, the first half of my career, it was really nice for me to have someone that I was so comfortable with and was basically like a, you know, a second father to me. And cause I knew, I think for me, and especially when I didn't have good days, I knew that he was there for me, and he was caddying because he wanted to see me do well. And his wife came out to a lot of tournaments, like they're great family friends. And it was really nice to have that. You know, because it happens too, like you always hear about players firing caddies, but sometimes caddies fire players. Or, you know, even if someone was caddying for me on Symetra Tour and they get asked by a girl full time on LPGA, they're going to leave me.
It makes sense.
You know, and it does. And it happens. So I had him for a long time, which was great. And then I had a caddy for 2019. Season I was out in 2018 with ankle surgery, so I had a caddy in 2019. He's actually the Wright State men's golf coach now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh. I didn't know that.
And then 2020 was COVID year, so I didn't have a caddy lined up yet for that season. And then the guy who's still in my bag, he started with me last March. He lives out in Phoenix, and we met through a mutual friend just in the golf community. So it's been great. But yeah, I like to have a little back and forth with my caddy. I really do like their opinion, especially now Brian and I are in a really good, now that he's been on my bag for almost a year, we're just, you know, we know each other very well. I really trust him. But to your question, Hank, at the end of the day, like, it has to be my decision. And that's that, right? So,
right.
I mean, I'll ask his opinion, and sometimes it sways me, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes I'm like, I'm just not feeling that for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. So, and then I just go with that. I will say, though, I'll never, or if I do go with my caddy's opinion and say, yeah, you know, I do like that shot, and say it doesn't work out or I don't hit it well, it's on me, right? Because I chose it. Like, I'll never tell my caddy, like, well, that was terrible advice.
Right.
Because, again, at the end of the day, like, it has to be my choice, or else it's just too hard to kind of figure out. You know, if you're always bouncing stuff back and forth and you're going with his half the time and yours half the time and stuff isn't working out, it's like, okay, well, what's the real issue?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I've learned from that, like, I just need to make the call. But I do like the input.
Absolutely. I mean, that totally makes sense. I always find, like, when I'm watching, and I don't know if I do watch the LPGA occasionally. I don't know if they show the caddy conversations as much as the PGA Tour tries to do.
They don't. I wish they would. I think they're going to try to start doing that a little bit more.
I wish they would, too.
Because the banter back and forth is cool to hear.
Especially if you're a player and you're watching. I mean, because when I'm standing over a shot and they, you know, Justin Thomas could have a 60-yard shot and I could have a 60-yard shot. And what they're talking about isn't even going through my brain. And I'm like, how are they thinking of these parameters to determine what the best shot is to hit? I'm just like.
Or Bryson's caddy taking into effect the, you know, air density. Just like.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm out on that one.
Yeah.
You know, you don't spray your clubs with water to imitate dew.
I don't. I've never done that. I'll just go practice when it's dewy out.
See, that's smart, you know?
Like, you're not wasting water at that
exactly,
point.
Exactly, yeah. Practicing with two track mans, yeah, I don't know.
Well, and I'm sure, I don't know if you saw the news, but he actually withdrew from that Saudi tournament last week with a hip and wrist injury.
I didn't see that.
And now everybody is, like, comparing the pre-bulk, post-bulk, and saying the swing speed is what's going to be his downfall ultimately.
But yeah, which he came out with
a statement,
said it's from, what did he say it was from?
He fell.
Yeah, he fell.
He said he fell. And the big,
so he's denying the speed training is the issue.
The big quote was, everybody needs to chill. And I was like, that is just so Bryson.
It's very Bryson.
Yeah.
I also, this doesn't really have anything to do with golf. It has stuff to do with golf, but I purchased a tie-dye LPGA sweatshirt because
nice.
I love it. And I have to know, do you have one?
Oh, yeah.
They are so cool.
They are.
I got like the algorithms got me because it knew I was thinking it somehow because it sent me a notification like limited time, they're discontinuing this. And I was like,
yeah, I missed out on that.
Gosh. So I ordered one. I had to. I mean,
that's awesome.
Yeah. And
I love it.
And it definitely, I mean, Michelle Wee is the one who like designed it from what I understand when they, cause they blew up, they like sold out immediately with them. So then I tried to get it then and I couldn't. And then, I mean, the buzz that was created from that sweatshirt, I mean, I definitely tuned into like an LPGA tour because of it. I mean,
definitely. And I do think, I don't know if I'm going to get in trouble for saying this, but I think we're going to try to have some more LPGA apparel for sale.
Let's go.
She might get in trouble for something she said on our podcast.
I don't think I'll get in trouble.
Scandal. No.
I don't think I'll get in trouble. But anyway, keep an eye out.
Well, right, I will. Absolutely.
You.
I mean,
if we get a message from LPGA tour, we'll delete it.
I will. I want to ask you this, too. We talked about, so I think we had an episode right after the 12-hole Bryson-Brooks match. And me and Chet were talking on one of our episodes. And first of all, the whole Brooks-Bryson rivalry is kind of just whatever. I'm not really crazy about either one of them.
Yeah.
But I thought with the match, it's always just one group that they're following. I was thinking, I told Chet this, I think like getting a Nelly, like someone I saw on Twitter said Nelly versus Xander, like gold medalists, or doing like a Nelly versus Jessica, and then just kind of incorporating the LPGA Tour in some way in those matches. And I don't know, we were talking about how you could, and I don't know if just like switching the tees would make it even with just the power that the men generate as, you know, so I wasn't sure how it would be, if it would be even, but I think that I would be more apt to view that than a Brooks Bryson 12 hole match.
For sure. I think it would be awesome. And I think it would be really cool if they did something like more along the lines of to make the teeing situation more fair, because really the LPGA plays a lot longer yardages than the men proportionately.
Sure. Yeah.
So, but I think it would be cool to do, yeah, or maybe you said it like this, but to kind of do something where, like, Nelly and Xander versus Jessica and JT.
Right.
Something like that.
That would be so much
be
fun
awesome.
To
even
watch.
Even if it was just a best ball or something or whatever, just any format would be fun to watch. But
right. And we talked about it in our episode where we kind of had a whole discussion on it.
Yeah.
I don't really think there's, other than the distance, I think the women can.
Oh, I think they can.
Their
take
wedge play, their iron play, and their putting and their short game is undoubtedly equal to the men. And so I think it would be so much fun to watch a match like that. And I think you'd get a lot more viewers because the Brooks Bryson thing was just. It's definitely just the cash grab.
It was so cringy, too. Like
I did watch it. And I'm sure that there was a reason, but I thought the 12 holes was pretty random.
Yeah.
Like play 9 or play 18.
Right.
Like I said, the 12.
The
12.
Yeah.
Especially right. Brooks was up, what, 4 or 5 shots pretty early,
yeah.
wasn't he?
Right.
And then I'm like, Bryson's like out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was not. And they didn't really play particularly well.
They didn't.
Of course, anyone who's really played in that, the match, I don't think we've seen anyone play out of their mind. If I remember right, I know the first one, Tiger and Phil.
Peyton Manning played pretty well.
Oh, yeah. Peyton and Tom.
And Tom Brady.
Tom Brady hold out.
Yeah. He got off to a rough start.
He
and
did.
Then he came around on the back nine for sure.
And that course, I mean, it's solidified. Like, we want to take a golf trip out.
Medalist?
This was at Big Sky.
Oh, okay. I thought I was talking about the Tiger,
Tom
Brady.
Yeah.
Oh, you're right. I guess there was two.
You're just
Tom
talking
Brady
about
ones.
Tiger and Phil, just them two, right?
No, I'm talking about the – it wasn't Tom. It was Tom. It was Tom and Aaron Rodgers with Phil and – who was the other golfer? The one that was in Montana and Bryson.
I know. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah. I was talking about that one.
Okay.
Okay. I was talking about Tiger, Phil, Peyton, and
that's one.
Tom
I forgot,
was that medalist.
I forgot that one.
That course is pretty pure. It's pretty high up on my list of courses I've played. It's really, really good.
What's the best?
Yeah, what's the...
People ask me that all the time. That's a hard one.
Give us just 5.
Okay.
They don't have to be in order.
Okay. So I played... This summer, I got to. Oh, I have to put Carnoustie in there.
Of course,
absolutely.
Okay, so I'm good. Okay, it's gonna be more than 5.
That's
fine.
Perfectly okay.
I'm gonna put Carnoustie in there. I'm gonna put. So this summer, I got to play Royal Portrush and Royal County Down.
Oh my gosh,
which were phenomenal. Those two in Northern Ireland. Medalist is really high on my list. It's a really, really good golf course. I really enjoyed it. Where else would I? What other ones would I put? Maybe I'm not going to do more than 5.
Oh, we stumped her.
Liar. No.
Have you played Pebble at all?
I haven't. I haven't even been to the Monterey Peninsula.
Wow. Huh.
Actually, the course that we play, now it's the Chevron Championship. It was the Dinosaur Craft Nabisco A&A.
Oh, the one where they jump in the water?
Yeah, in Poppy's Pond.
Right.
That golf course is really good. And the Dinosaur course at Mission Hills is a great golf course. Unfortunately, this is the last year we're going to be playing there. It's going to move to the Houston area with the new Chevron
I heard
sponsorship.
That, yeah.
Yeah.
Because it was a big deal last year because it's like one of the last times they get to do the pond jump, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
What's your take on that? Like, do you think it's a good thing?
I have no opinion. I think in the long run, it's a good thing.
Okay.
You know, to have such a big corporation such as Chevron backing the LPGA.
Right, it's true.
Is huge. And this is, I might be wrong. I want to say this is like the 50th year of the A&A.
Wow.
Now the Chevron. So, you know, we've been in Palm Springs for a long time, and there's a lot of history at that golf course and Poppy's Pond, and all the caddies wear the white jumpsuits. And,
right.
You know, it's great. But I do think having Chevron as a sponsor and a partner of the tour is just a really good chance to keep the growth going.
Right.
And I was going to say that. I don't know if it's just my awareness. You know, I was in high school, you know, 2012. But I don't know if I'm just watching more golf.
Are you calling me old?
No.
Just kidding.
But it does seem that there has been a jump in LPGA just interest.
Oh, 100%.
Like golf Twitter. I mean, I follow a lot of golf writers. And it seems I just get a lot more LPGA content than I would have even 2 years ago.
Definitely. I tell people all the time, I think it's a great time to be on the LPGA Tour. It's growing every year. You know, purses are going up. You know, we're getting more and more big corporations backing us. Our social media numbers are up every year. The amount of time we're on network TV is up every single year. It's just really, really trending. You know, last year at the British for AIG to bump the purse by another $1 million to like $6.8 million. This year, ProMedica is sponsoring the U.S. Women's Open, and the purse is going to be $10
million.
Nice. I saw a tweet about that,
that's
actually.
Big.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's
so
crazy.
So the winner is going to get $1.8 million.
That's awesome.
That is.
Just for the 1 week.
Go
so
get it. Go get it.
I know. So it's a great time. You know, people are really investing in women's sports, and And it's great. Like, it's great to see, because I truly feel like we have a great product, the LPGA
Absolutely.
Tour.
Absolutely, yeah. And I'm not just saying that because you're here, but I do think, like, the LPGA Tour is very fun to watch, because we see it on the men's tour. It's a lot of just drive and chip up. But the different areas of game you get to see when you watch the LPGA Tour, you just see, you know, long irons, short irons, and short game all. And it's just, I mean.
I think that your guys' swings are so much more pure and so much more fun to watch than men's. Like, I honestly
well, thank
do.
You.
100%.
Like, they're just so smooth, and it makes no sense. It's like,
we,
I want to
do
this.
We do hear that a lot from people, definitely, yeah. that, or, you know, or even, you know, amateur men who maybe their club speeds are a little bit more similar to ours.
Right.
They're like, you know, your game is so much more reflective of my game, so I learn so much more from watching you versus the guys carrying it 310 yards. It's just a whole different world. And they're amazing athletes. And honestly, like, looking at all the guys who swing so fast, but they swing to balance every time, is what amazes me. And I feel like that's something that doesn't really get talked about a whole lot.
It should.
And, yeah. And when you're moving that quickly, like when you're swinging at 120, 125 miles an hour, you know, the centerness of hit has to be impeccable. You know, if your club head speed is, if your face is 3 degrees open at impact, you know, someone who's swinging at 90 miles an hour versus someone who's swinging at 125 miles an hour, right? The 125 miles an hour is going way deeper in the woods, where the 90 mile an hour club head speed's probably just going to be in the right rough.
Right.
For example, you know, so like that to me is what amazes me about the men, is the centerness of hit, and just they have such power, but they swing to balance every single time.
I actually was thinking about that. I was watching a slow-mo swing that was retweeted on my timeline. And I mean, I don't swing very fast. I mean, I swing sort of fast, I suppose, but not anywhere in the hunt. I don't even think I'm breaking 100, to be honest.
But, you are.
But I never, I mean, you can ask Chet, I never am balanced. I over-rotate really bad. That is one thing that blows my mind when you see Brooks, like, because they rip it.
Yeah.
And they still finish in the pose. And I always try to finish in the pose and end up just, like, stumbling.
Well, and even just, you know, the amount of speed and strength it takes to move the club that quickly. Or even girls on LPGA. There's a number of girls who swing over 100 miles an hour with their driver.
Yeah.
So there's a couple that are even pushing 110, some of our longest hitters. And the other part is having the strength and body control then to stop that speed. You know, so
yeah,
that's the other part
for sure.
of it. So, and that, again, that's kind of partly too, like for a speed training, or, you know, even trying to hit it far with golf, like something that's so big is, you know, one, being able to move it that quickly, but then also being able to receive that speed when you're finished.
It's just crazy. And I agree with Chet though. It is more fun to watch the smooth swings. I think you were saying it's, amateur golfers will get a little bit more out of watching that as opposed to watching the walking Neiman's, who I don't know how he doesn't break his back.
That
every
hurts
time
my back every time I see him. It's just
I
so
saw
painful.
There was a screenshot. I mean, he was like, I don't know how. I just don't know
his
how.
His back's like parallel with the ground. Makes no sense.
He's just pretty limber. Yeah, pretty limber.
So to kind of wrap it up here for us, I just kind of want, what are your big goals? I mean, the season's getting ready to kind of really jump into to the high gear. What are your big goals? I mean, what are you looking forward to the most? And just, you know, how is this season going to pan out? Hope, you know, in what you're hoping for.
Right. I would say, you know, if I'm not in them at the beginning of the season, my first main goal would be to qualify for all five majors, get into the field for all five. I think that's huge. And, you know, obviously playing in the, you know, the biggest fields in women's golf. And then I would say, so last year was my best season on LPGA. I finished 90th on the points list. So last
Congrats.
Season was...
Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, and so last season was the first season we transitioned from money list to points list, more like the men.
Mm-hmm.
So I finished 90th on the points list. Really for us, if you're in the top 80, you're fully exempt. Technically, you're like your category one, the best one that you can have for the next season. So I think it's a realistic and a good goal for me to try to crack into the top 80 this season. And that brings, you know, a, some more benefits that even now I'm fully exempt and I didn't need to go back to Q school at the end of last season. But, you know, being in the top 80, you do get more benefits, more guaranteed starts, those types of things. And then the other one, I would say the really high achiever goal would be to finish in the top 60 on the the points list, from the sense of then you're getting into all pretty much all the limited field events, all the Asian events, because all the events we play over there are anywhere between 55 to 70 LPGA spots. So they're pretty small. All of those, none of those fields have a cut. So it's, I mean, it's a long, it's long travel and all that, but you know, you're guaranteed to get points and make a paycheck. So, so really getting into that, I would say the top 60 is a good benchmark for that. So those twofold, I would say definitely the top 80 this season, if not the top 60 in play in all five majors.
Well, you are number one in driving accuracy so far this season.
Am I really?
Yeah.
Oh.
90.
Who knew?
92.8%.
Okay.
That's insane. That's impressive.
In all fairness, we were in Florida. Their fairways are pretty generous.
But still. Mine would be like 30%.
I'm just kidding.
I missed the fairway 92%
of
the
time. You're 16th in greens and regulation, too. 74.4%. That's impressive.
Oh, good. Thank you. Thank you. I didn't know.
So, I mean, your tee to green's looking good. How's it?
Yeah, the putting needs a little the putting needs a little work.
Hey, I didn't bring it up.
It's all right. Anyone who knows me, that's not a shocker.
Has putting always been kind of your...
Which, whenever we had our little match going, our putting was kind of rough, too.
Yeah,
granted,
I still...
Granted, it was rainy.
I still haven't... I've played a lot at Turtle, but I haven't played enough to really feel like I know the greens inside and out.
That's fair.
A lot of time, you know, especially when I'm only here for like a week, you know, I'll take Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday off. I'll probably just practice Thursday, maybe play Friday, Saturday, and then I leave again. So I don't get out on the course a ton. So, I mean, I know all the holes, I know generally, but sometimes, I mean, a lot of times out there, especially on the front nine, the original course, sometimes I'm on the greens and I have a 5-footer and I'm like, I don't know if it's right edge or left edge.
It's brutal.
Am I the
it's
only crazy. One?
No,
okay.
You're not. You're
okay.
Not. Those greens are sneaky.
And they are.
Like, it'll look like it's going to break and it just doesn't.
Yeah.
Or it won't look like it's going to break and it dives. And
Well, I'm glad I'm not the only one, because I feel like I always hit the ball well out there and I just don't make putts. Yeah. So putting would be the big one. I actually was working with my coach down today on some putting things. I was rolling the ball very well last week. I was all around it. Now, like the second round, for example, when I shot even, I hit 16 greens and shot even. I had five or six lip outs. And again, like I was just all around the hole. So we were trying to figure out, you know, why was I lipping out versus making them? Was it the read? Right. Was it speed? Was it stroke? I don't think it's my mechanics. I do think I need to do a better job of dialing in my speed. So that's going to be a big one. Just kind of a lot of feel drills and matching up the lines and speed. I'm pretty solid inside of 7 feet, but, you know, that 8 to 20 foot range, kind of the majority of your birdie putts.
Right.
Yeah.
You're legitimate birdie looks. I just
20 to 30 for me.
Yep.
I'm way out there.
I'm chipping for birdies. Yeah.
really trying to train that, and each week do a little bit more work on the practice green to try to dial it in so I can match him up a little bit more in tournament rounds.
Right. That's
well, awesome. Very, very cool. Very exciting. I would sign a contract right now. I'm going to watch LPGA whenever it's on just so I can catch you. Just
thank you.
For sure.
100%. And, you know, you
I
said
always
it,
check every week, see if you're playing.
You
yeah,
said
there's an LPGA app. It's pretty good.
It can't be worse than the PGA Tour app, because it is. We really appreciate you just coming on here and talking with us. You're more than welcome to come back anytime. And once it warms up and, you know, us casual golfers are able to actually get out and play, we want to try to start doing some. It may not be with this, but we want to do some live videos and get, because me and Chet have some pretty good matches out there. And,
yeah.
You know, we're just doing it for fun. So if you're ever out at Turtle and you see us, 100%, just come join our group and you can meet Dad and Grant and Jesse too, and they're all
get a little game going.
That would be awesome. I'd love to.
But
always up for a game.
Absolutely. So again, thank you so much for coming. As always, I'm Henry Bourne alongside.
I'm Chet Jameson, but we forgot our sponsor.
Oh, I always do this. Chet, take it. Take it away.
Okay, so you're back from Florida, right? It's cold up here, right? You need a beanie.
I do need a beanie.
Flagstickgolfapparel.com has beanies.
And you can get a 10% discount using MuniPros, no caps, all lowercase, as the promo code.
Perfect. Yes.
Flagstickgolfapparel.com. MuniPros is the code to get the discount. And hop in there. They got great beanies. I'm sure their spring line's coming out soon.
Yep, they got great shirts. They
got nice dry fit shirts. So, as always, I'm Henry Bourne alongside Chet Jameson. This is the Muni Pros Podcast, and we will be back next week. Thank you very much.
Yep, take care.